Last week we covered Deuteronomy chapter 5 and 6, which, if you remember, is Moses recounting the Ten Commandments. And that's the majority of chapter 5. And then he reminds the Jews in chapter 6 of the greatest commandment, and that the Lord is their God and they shall serve no other. As we get into chapter 7, we're going to see that Moses reminds them that they are a chosen people, that God chose them above all other nations, and not because they were the most powerful, because they were the least powerful, they were slaves in Egypt, and not because they were the most numerous, because they weren't, they were a small nation, and not because of anything they had done themselves, but because God wanted to show the world that it was Him putting these people as His chosen people on top, giving them the land that He had promised to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to their descendants, and showing the world that even this small nation of people who were not powerful could overthrow some of the most powerful nations in that land and on the planet at the time. So we'll get into chapter 7, and we'll read the first 5 verses to start with. And we're going to spend most of our time in Deuteronomy. We'll be jumping into Joshua and Judges for a little bit tonight to look at the result of some of the things that we're going to be talking about in chapter 7 and 8. But we'll be spending most of our time reading out of the book of Deuteronomy today. So starting in chapter 7, in verse 1, "When the Lord your God brings you into the land where you are entering to possess it, and clears away many of the nations before you, the Hittites and the Girgashites, the Amorites and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, 7 nations greater and stronger than you. And when the Lord your God delivers them before you, and you defeat them, then you shall utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them, and show no favor to them." Let's remember that verse too. It's going to be pretty important as we get into our study tonight. God specifically tells them that He is going to be taking care of this. They don't have to worry about losing the battle because God is going to be fighting for them. But He warns them in verse 2 that they should not keep any of these Canaanites, any of these nations that He's mentioned, alive. They should kill them, utterly slaughter them all, men, women, and children. And that they should not make any covenants with them. And we're going to see something about that later in the study this evening. In verse 3, "Furthermore, you shall not intermarry with them. You shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and He will quickly destroy you. But thus you shall do to them. You shall tear down their altars and smash their sacred pillars and hew down their ashram and burn their graven images with fire." All right, very specific. God instructed them to be merciless to the people of this land. People look at this part of the Bible and say, what a merciless God He is. He's absolutely slaughtering nations of people, wiping them out. What they don't understand is that 400 years ago, God had told His people that the land that they were living in wasn't theirs yet. It would be eventually. But that these people had not become wicked enough. They had not turned their hearts away from God enough. There had not been enough of these people showing that they had no interest in God whatsoever. God gave them a chance, 400 years, to change the way that they were living their lives, to change the God that they were serving. And the people of this land, all these 7 nations who are mentioned, chose not to do so. God is not merciless for those who are willing to listen to God. God is not merciless for those who are willing to do what God commands. But to those who ignore God and who have no interest in doing what God commands, he is absolutely merciless. He will show no mercy to those people if they do not change their hearts. So, did the Israelites do as they were told by God? These first five verses, what were they supposed to do? Utterly wipe everything out. Utterly wipe out the nations. So this is where we're going to veer away for a little while. We're going to head over to Judges chapter 1. So, did the Israelites destroy the seven nations that God named here as commanded? Let's read. Judges chapter 1 and verse 1. Now it came about after the death of Joshua that the sons of Israel inquired of the Lord, saying, "Who shall go up against who shall go up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them?" The Lord said, "Judah shall go up. Behold, I have given the land into his hand." Then Judah said to Simeon, his brother, "Come up with me into the territory allotted to me, that we may fight against the Canaanites, and I in turn will go with you into your territory allotted to you." So Simeon went with him. Judah went up, and the Lord gave the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hands, and they defeated 10,000 men at Bezek. They found Adonai Bezek in Bezek and fought against him, and they defeated the Canaanites and the Perizzites. But Adonai Bezek fled, and they pursued him and caught him and cut off his big thumbs and his big toes. Adonai Bezek said, 70 kings with their thumbs and their big toes cut off used to gather up scraps under my table. So, as I have done, so God has repaid me. So they brought him to Jerusalem, and he died there. Then the sons of Judah fought against Jerusalem and captured it, and struck it with the edge of the sword, and set the city on fire. Afterward, the sons of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites, living in the hill country, in the Negev, and in the lowland. So Judah went against the Canaanites who lived in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron formerly was Kiriath Arba. And they struck Shesiah and Ammon and Talmai. Then from there, he went against the inhabitants of Debir. Now the name of Debir formerly was Kiriath Sefer. And Caleb, the one who attacks Kiriath Sefer and captures it, the one who captures Kiriath Sefer and captures it, I will even give him my daughter Aksa for a wife. Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, captured it, so he gave him his daughter Aksa for a wife. Then it came about, when she came to him, that she persuaded him to ask her father for a field. Then she alighted from her donkey, and Caleb said to her, "What do you want?" She said to him, "Give me a blessing, since you have given me the land of the Negev. Give me also springs of water." So Caleb gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. The descendants of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up from the city of Palms with the sons of Judah to the wilderness of Judah, which is in the south of Arad. And they went and lived with the people. Then Judah went with Simeon, his brother, and they struck the Canaanites living in Zephath and utterly destroyed it. So the name of the city was called Hormah. And Judah took Gaza with its territory, and Ashkelon with its territory, and Ekron with its territory. Now the Lord was with Judah, and he took possession of the hill country, but they could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley because they had iron chariots. Then they gave Hebron to Caleb, as Moses had promised, and he drove out from there the three sons of Anak. But the sons of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. So the Jebusites have lived with the sons of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. Likewise, the house of Joseph went up against Bethel, and the Lord was with them. The house of Joseph spied out Bethel. Now the name of the city was formerly Luz. The spies saw a man coming out of the city and said to him, "Please show us the entrance to the city, and we will treat you kindly." So he showed them the entrance to the city, and they struck the city with the edge of the sword. But they let the man and all his family go free. The man went into the land of the Hittite and built a city and named it Luz, which is its name to this day. But Manasseh did not take possession of Bethel Shean and its villages, or Taanach and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, or the inhabitants of Ibleam and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages. So the Canaanites persisted in living in that land. It came about when Israel became strong that they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not drive them out completely. Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who were living in Gezer, so the Canaanites lived in Gezer among them. Zebulon did not drive out the inhabitants of Kitron or the inhabitants of Nahalol, so the Canaanites lived among them. and became subject to forced labor. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of Aco, or the inhabitants of Sidon, or of Aleb, or of Akzib, or of Helba, or of Aphek, or of Rehob. So the Asherites lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. Naphtali did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh, or the inhabitants of Beth Anath, but lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of that land. And the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and Beth Anath became forced labor for them. Then the Amorites forced the sons of Dan into the hill country, for they did not allow them to come down to the valley. Yet the Amorites persisted in living in Mount Heres, in Aijalon, and in Shalbim. But when the power of the house of Joseph grew strong, they became forced labor. The border of the Amorites ran from the ascent of Akrabim, from Selah, and upward. And then starting in chapter 2 and verse 1, now the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I brought you out of Egypt and led you to the land which I have sworn to your fathers, and I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And as for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall tear down their altars, but you have not obeyed me. What is this you have done? Therefore I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they will become as thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare to you. When the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, the people lifted up their voices and wept. So they named the place Bochim, and there they sacrificed to the Lord. So, long reading, I know. Did the Israelites destroy the seven nations as commanded? Not even close. If we were to dive into the book of Joshua, which we're going to do a little bit of, we'll see that Joshua, while he was living and while he was leading, was wiping out people as commanded. But when Joshua dies, and when the elders who were alive with Joshua die, this is what happens. The people chose to live with these people, even though they may have made them forced labor. What does that mean? We've got Canaanites living with the Jews, living in their household, forced labor, slaves in their households. Do you think these slaves gave up their idols? Think they stopped worshiping their Baals? Not even close. So, what was the first failure of the conquest of Israel? So, what we're reading in Deuteronomy now is the time right before they're about to come in. And what's the first city they take?
Jericho,
right across the river. What's the second city they try to take? Ai. Are they successful?
No.
No, not at first. So let's flip over to Joshua chapter 7 and verse 1. Joshua chapter 7 and verse 1. And this is shortly after they begin their conquest. They had, within weeks, just confirmed their covenant with the Lord. They had just had the law read to them by Moses. What we're reading in Deuteronomy is going to happen weeks before this happens in Joshua 7, chapter 1. But the sons of Israel acted unfaithfully in regard to the things under the ban. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, from the tribe of Judah, took some of the things under the ban. Therefore the anger of the Lord burned against the sons of Israel. Now Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Beth Aven, east of Bethel, and said to them, go up and spy out the land. So the men went up and spied out Ai. They returned to Joshua and said to him, do not let the people go up. Only about 2,000 or 3,000 men need to go up to Ai. Do not make all the people toil up there, for they are few. So about 3,000 men from the people went up there, but they fled from the men of Ai. The men of Ai struck down about 36 of their men and pursued them from the gate as far as Sherebim and struck them down on the descent. So the hearts of the people melted and became as water. Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until the evening, both he and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. Joshua said, alas, O Lord Yahweh, why did you ever bring this people over the Jordan only to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us? If only we had been willing to dwell beyond the Jordan. O Lord, what can I say since Israel has turned their back before their enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it, and they will surround us and cut off our name from the earth. And what will you do for your great name? So the Lord Yahweh said to Joshua, rise up. Why is it that you have fallen on your face? Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them. And they have taken some of the things under the ban, and have stolen and deceived. Moreover, they have also put them among their own things. Therefore, the sons of Israel cannot stand before their enemies. They turn their backs before their enemies, for they have become accursed. I will not be with you anymore unless you destroy the things under the ban from your midst. Rise up, consecrate the people, and say, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow, for thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, there are things under the ban in your midst, O Israel. You cannot stand before your enemies until you have removed the things from under the ban from your midst. In the morning, then you shall come near by your tribes, and it shall be that the tribe which the Lord takes by lot shall come near by families, and the family which the Lord takes shall come near by households, and the household which the Lord takes shall come near by man by man. And it shall be that the one who is taken with the things under the ban shall be burned with fire, he and all that belongs to him, because he has transgressed the covenant of the Lord, and because he has committed a disgraceful thing in Israel. So Joshua rose early in the morning and brought Israel near by tribes, and the tribe of Judah was taken. And he brought the family of Judah near, and he took the family of the Zerahites. And he brought the family of the Zerahites near, man by man, and Zabdi was taken. And he brought his household near, man by man, and Achan, son of Carmi, son of Zabdi, son of Zerah, from the tribe of Judah, was taken. Then Joshua said to Achan, my son, I implore you, give glory to Yahweh, the God of Israel, and give praise to him, and tell me now what you have done. Do not hide it from me. So Achan answered Joshua and said, truly I have sinned against Yahweh, the God of Israel, and this is what I did. When I saw among the spoil a beautiful mantle from Shinar, and 200 shekels of silver, and a bar of gold 50 shekels in weight, then I coveted them, and I took them. And behold, they are concealed in the earth inside my tent with the silver underneath it. So Joshua sent messengers, and they ran to the tent, and behold, it was concealed in his tent with the silver underneath it. And they took them from inside the tent and brought them to Joshua and to all the sons of Israel, and they poured them out before the Lord. Then Joshua and all of Israel with him took Achan the son of Zerah, the silver, the mantle, the bar of gold, his sons, his daughters, his oxen, his donkeys, his sheep, his tent, and all that belonged to him. And they brought them up to the valley of Achor. Joshua said, why have you troubled us? Yahweh will trouble you this day. And all Israel stoned them with stones, and they burned them with fire after they had stoned them with stones. They raised over him a great heap of stones that stands to this day, and Yahweh turned from the fierceness of his anger. Therefore, the name of this place has been called the Valley of Achor to this day. What did that single covenant-breaking man cost Israel? Cost Israel their fight against Ai, their reputation in the country as undefeated, cost 36 men, 36 of their fighting men, cost time, and cost everything that belonged to that man, including all of his children, his wife, and everything that was in his tent. Because he got greedy. Because he coveted something. Which we've been talking a lot about in the last few weeks. Book of Leviticus, Book of Deuteronomy. No coveting allowed. And this man coveted. And it cost the lives of dozens of people. So the first failure in the conquest of Israel was the failure to take Ai. Who was to blame? A single man. What was the second failure in the conquest of the Promised Land? Let's read about that. In Joshua chapter 9 and verse 1. Now it came about when all the kings who were beyond the Jordan in the hill country and in the lowland and on all the coast of the great sea toward Lebanon, the Hittite and the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite heard of it, that they gathered themselves together with one accord to fight with Joshua and with Israel. When the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and to Ai, because God had granted them the ability after they took care of their covenant breaker to take Ai, and they did so. They also acted craftily. These are the Gibeonites. They acted craftily and set out envoys and took worn-out sacks on their donkeys and wineskins worn out and torn and mended and worn out and patched sandals on their feet and worn out clothes on themselves. And all the bread of their provisions was dry and had become crumbled. They went to Joshua, to the camp at Gilgal, and said to him and to the men of Israel, "We have come from a far country. Now therefore, make a covenant with us." The men of Israel said to the Hivites, "Perhaps you are living within our land. How then shall we make a covenant with you?" But they said to Joshua, "We are your servants." Then Joshua said to them, "Who are you, and where do you come from?" They said to him, "Your servants have come from a very far country. Because of the fame of the Lord your God, we have heard of the report of him and all that he did in Egypt, and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon king of Heshbon, and to Og king of Bashan, who was at Ashtaroth. So our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spoke to us, saying, 'Take provisions in your hand for the journey, and go to meet them, and say to them, "We are your servants, now then make a covenant with us." This is our bread was warm. This our bread was warm when we took it for our provisions out of our houses on the day that we left to come to you. But now behold, it has dry and become crumbled. These wineskins which we filled were new, and behold, they are torn. These are our clothes and our sandals and are worn out because of the very long journey. So the men of Israel, So the men of Israel took some of their provisions and did not ask for the counsel of the Lord. Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live. And the leaders of the congregation swore an oath to them. It came about at the end of 3 days after they had made a covenant with them that they heard that they were neighbors and that they were living within their land. Then the sons of Israel set out and came to their cities on the third day. Now their cities were Gibeon and Sapphira and Beeroth and Kiriath-Jearim. The sons of Israel did not strike them because the leaders of the congregation had sworn to them by Yahweh, the God of Israel, and the whole congregation grumbled against the leaders. But all the leaders said to the whole congregation, "We have sworn to them by Yahweh, the God of Israel, and now we cannot touch them. This we will do to them, even let them live, so that wrath will not be upon us for the oath which we swore to them." The leaders said to them, "Let them live." So they became hewers of wood and drawers of water for the whole congregation, just as the leaders had spoken to them. Then Joshua called for them and spoke to them, saying, "Why have you deceived us, saying, 'We are very far from you,' when you are living within our land? Now therefore you are cursed and shall never cease being slaves, both hewers of wood and drawers of water, for the house of God." So they answered Joshua and said, "Because it was certainly told your servants that the Lord your God, Yahweh, had commanded his servant Moses to give you all the land and destroy all the inhabitants in the land before you. Therefore, we feared greatly for our lives because of you and have done this thing. Now behold, we are in your hands. Do as it seems good and right in your sight to do to us." Thus he did to them and delivered them from the hands of the sons of Israel, and they did not kill them. But Joshua made them that day hewers of wood and drawers of water for the congregation and for the altar of Yahweh to this day in the place which he would choose. So we read in Deuteronomy two things they weren't to do. Do not covet and don't make covenants. What two things did they do within a month of receiving that commandment? One man coveted and it cost them lives. And then the leaders made a covenant. Is that going to cost them lives? Do you think all these Amorites living with all of these people that we read in Judges cost them lives? Absolutely. It didn't cost them lives that immediate second, no. They made a covenant with people without asking God, in direct violation of God's commandment. Don't make covenants with the people. They didn't even consult God about it. Joshua didn't consult God. The leaders didn't consult God. Did they know better? Had they just heard what they were not to do? It's not like this was a 39-year-old telling of the law. In Deuteronomy, we're going to read everything they needed to know. It is a complete telling of the law before they go across the Jordan to take the cities. And the second failure in the conquest of the Promised Land, who was to blame? It was the leader of the Israelites. It was the chosen one of God, Joshua. One of only two men who got the privilege of coming into the Promised Land of the entire congregation that was over 20. He and Caleb were the only two. Moses didn't even get that privilege. But Joshua didn't listen. So we'll flip back to Deuteronomy now. We're in chapter 7. And we're going to read verses 6 through 8. And then we're going to skip ahead a little bit and read Deuteronomy chapter 9, verses 4 through 6. These verses tell us why God chose the Jews. So in chapter 7 and verse 6, "For you are a holy people set apart to Yahweh your God. Yahweh has chosen you to be a people for his own possession out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love on you nor choose you because you were more in number than any of the peoples, for you were the fewest in number of all peoples. But because the Lord loved you and kept the oath which he swore to your forefathers, the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery, from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt." And then skipping ahead to Deuteronomy chapter 9 and verses 4 through 6. "Do not say in your heart, when the Lord your God has driven them out before you, 'Because of my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land,' but it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is dispossessing them before you. It is not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart that you are going to possess their land, but it is because of the wickedness of those nations that the Lord your God is driving them out before you in order to confirm the oath which Yahweh swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Know then, it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess, for you are a stubborn people." So why did God choose the Jews? What did the Jews have? Were they stronger than anybody? Were they the mightiest fighters in the land? Exactly. God was keeping a promise. God doesn't break covenants. God doesn't forget promises. God promised Abraham that from him would come many nations. God promised Abraham that his people would inherit the land. God promised Isaac and Jacob the same thing. Absolutely nothing that they were getting was of their own merit. As God says here, these people were stiff-necked, stubborn, unwilling to bend. They wanted what they wanted on their own terms. They were unwilling to listen to God. And God told them and warned them and warned them again about what would happen if they forgot the promises that they made, if they broke the covenant that they swore, if they chose not to follow the commandments that God had laid before them, that they all confirmed When we were talking last week, we got into that confirmation where Moses reminded them that there were people standing there who confirmed the covenant. Those who were 20 and under were ready to go into the land. All the rest of the people had died off. But those who were 20 and under were standing in the presence of Sinai when the covenant was made, and were standing in the presence of Moses to remember that they had made that covenant. And those people, as we read ahead a little bit in the future here, were covenant breakers, making choices that were contrary to God's will and not listening to what God had to say. God made the covenant. God kept his part of the covenant. He does not break his promises. God promised Abraham. God promised Isaac. God promised Jacob. These people are the ones who are breaking the covenant. So we'll read the rest of chapter 7, verses 9 through 26. These are just more warnings and more promises for the people. Starting in verse 9, "Now therefore the Lord your God, he is God, the faithful God, who keeps his covenant and his loving kindness to a thousandth generation with those who love him and keep his commandments. But he reminds the people, he repays those who hate him to their faces to destroy them. He will not delay with him who hates him, but will repay him to his face. Therefore you shall keep the commandment and the statutes and the judgments which I am commanding you today to do them. Then it shall come about, because you listen to these judgments and keep them and do them, that Yahweh will keep with you his covenant and his loving kindness which he swore to your forefathers. He will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your ground, your grain and your new wine and your oil, the increase of your herd, the young of your flock, in the land which he swore to your forefathers to give you. You shall be blessed above all peoples. There will be no male or female barren among you or among your cattle. The Lord will remove from you all sickness. He will not put on any of you the harmful diseases of Egypt, which you have known, but he will lay them on all who hate you. You shall consume all of the peoples whom the Lord your God deliver to you. Your eye shall not pity them, nor shall you serve their gods, for that would be a snare to you. If you should say in your heart, 'These nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them?' You shall not be afraid of them. You shall well remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. The great trials which your eyes saw, and the signs and the wonders and the mighty hand and the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out, so shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples whom you are afraid. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet against them until those who are left and hide themselves from you perish. You shall not dread them, for Yahweh is in your midst, a great and awesome God. Yahweh your God will clear away these nations before you little by little. You will not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beasts would grow too numerous for you. But Yahweh will deliver them before you and will throw them into great confusion until they are destroyed. He will deliver their kings into your hand so that you will make their name perish from under heaven. No man will be able to stand before you until you have destroyed them. The graven images of their gods you are to burn with fire. You shall not covet the silver or the gold that is on them, nor take it for yourselves, or you will be snared by it, for it is an abomination to Yahweh. You shall not bring an abomination into your house and like it come under the ban. You shall utterly detest it, and you shall utterly abhor it, for it is something banned." These people saw what happened when they took something from the ban. They just saw it happen. They saw what happened to Achan, to his family, to everything he owned. And it's not going to stop these people from violating that law again. Moving on into chapter 8. In this chapter, we have kind of a condensed history. He's going to give them a blast from the past, what to expect now that they're about to partake, that they're about to enter into the promised land, and a warning about the future. So starting in chapter 8 and verse 1, "All the commandments that I am commanding you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which your Lord, which Yahweh, swore to give your forefathers. You shall remember all the way which Yahweh has led you in the wilderness these 40 years, that he might humble you, testing you, to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commandments or not. He humbled you and let you be hungry, and then he fed you with manna which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you understand that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahweh. Your clothing did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. Thus you are to know in your heart that Yahweh was disciplining you just as a man disciplines his son. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways and to fear him." So God's reminding them again, just in a very condensed 6 verses, of what he did for them, what he has done for them over these past 40 years, reminding them that he cared for them, that they did not have to worry about food or about water, not even for not only the population, but all of their cattle. Everybody and everything that they owned was taken care of. God made sure of it. Even though they were disobedient to God, and even though much of the population knew they weren't going to survive to see the promised land, they were still taken care of. God took care of them. Starting in verse 7, God reminds them of what they're going into. For Yahweh is bringing you into a land, a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs, flowing forth in valleys and hills, land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, land of olive oil and honey, a land where you will eat food without scarcity, in which you will not lack anything, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills you can dig copper. When you have eaten and are satisfied, you shall bless Yahweh, your God, for the good land which he has given you. Beware that you do not forget Yahweh, your God, by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I am commanding you today. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and live in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold multiply and all that you have multiplies, then your heart will become proud and you will forget Yahweh your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. He led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water. He brought water for you out of the rock of flint. In the wilderness, he fed you manna which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do good for you in the end. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, my power and the strength of my hand has made me this wealth. But you shall remember Yahweh, your God, for it is he who gives you the power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. I can't imagine a place more lovely to live, and we've heard from Larry many times about how nice it is there to this day. These people were looking at a land where 7 nations were flourishing, where their cities were walled, fortified, where they had no lack of food, no lack of grazing land for their cattle, no lack of anything. The Lord had taken care of the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Perizzites. He had blessed them until he blessed them no longer. And that's what the Lord was reminding, that he was giving the Jews. It was not their strength, it was not their ability, it was not their numbers that were taking the land. It was God. We read just a little bit ago how God was going to use the hornet to drive people away, to make them leave the land, to make it uncomfortable for them so they didn't want to be there. And if they chose to hide, then they would die where they were. God was going to do everything he could to make these people as comfortable and as blessed as possible. All they had to do was obey him. Follow his commandments. Keep the covenant. He wasn't asking for a lot. He was asking for them to remember who gave them what they had. Asking them to remember where it all came from. The last two verses of chapter 8, verses 19 and 20, read like this. It shall come about, if you ever forget the Lord your God, and go after other gods and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you today that you will surely perish. Like the nations that the Lord makes perish before you, so you shall perish, because you would not listen to the voice of the Lord your God. I'm going to jump back over to Judges chapter 2. Judges chapter 2 and verse 10. We've been looking at a lot of flashbacks. Oh, I'm flashing forward. I'm impatient. I can't go months without seeing what actually happens. So, Judges chapter 2 and verse 10. All that generation also were gathered to their fathers. That's the generation that came up and came into the land that God had brought out of Egypt, that God had brought through the wilderness, that came into the promised land with Caleb and Joshua. All that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know Yahweh, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel. Then the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they forsook Yahweh, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were there around them, and bowed themselves down to them, and thus provoked Yahweh to anger. So they forsook Yahweh and served Baal and the Ashtaroth. And the anger of Yahweh burned against Israel, and he gave them into the hands of plunderers who plundered them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies around them, so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. Wherever they went, the hand of Yahweh was against them for evil, as Yahweh had spoken, and as Yahweh had sworn to them, so that they were severely distressed. It took one generation. It took the people who remembered dying and not passing it on to the next generation. What, 60 or 80 years, maybe? Joshua died at the age of 110. It took one generation, and the people forgot who God was and what he had done. Did the Jews forget the Lord? And it didn't take long. Starting in the, as I said, we just get into the beginning part of chapter 9, where the Lord reminds them again. We've read part of this. We're going to read the first three verses here. The Lord reminds them that they're not getting this land because of anything they've done. Not getting this land because they worshipped him so well. They're not getting this land because they were such great covenant keepers. They're not getting this land for anything except for the oath that God swore. Deuteronomy chapter 9 and verse 1. Hear, O Israel, you are crossing over the Jordan today to go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than you, great cities fortified to heaven, a people great and tall, the sons of the Anakim, who you know, and of whom you have heard it said, who can stand before the sons of Anak? Know therefore today that it is Yahweh your God who is crossing over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them, and he will subdue them before you, so that you may drive them out and destroy them quickly, just as the Lord has spoken to you. And then what we read before, verses 4 through 6, not to say in your heart, when the Lord your God has driven them out before you, because of my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land, But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is dispossessing them before you. It is not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart that you're going to possess their land. But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God is driving them out before you, in order to confirm the oath which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Know then, it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess. For you are a stubborn people. Do you think Moses understood that phrase? What did these people cost Moses? They cost him the chance to go into the promised land. Because of their stubbornness, because of their grumbling, constantly for 40 years, it finally got under Moses' skin. The point that he neglected the Lord in a way that he shouldn't have. And it cost him his chance to go. But you can just hear Moses reading this to these people. All of the people that he had taken out of Egypt, of all those people, he was reading to just those who were 20 and under at the time that they lost the right to go in, 39 years ago. He was reading to these people now who are in their 60s, 50s maybe. Reading to these people and reminding them that all of them had cost him his chance because of what they had done. And that they were stubborn, that they were stiff-necked, and that it was going to cost them too eventually. And we see that after Joshua died, it does start to cost them. They start to feel the pain. They start to feel what happens when you become a covenant breaker. I'm not going to go any further in chapter 9. It kind of diverges into something different. I'm going to let Larry cover that from here on out. So I'm going to be done with the class tonight. Larry has an extra 10 minutes next week because I'm letting you go early.